Our next presenter is Jose Arturo Bauermeister. He is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Behavior and Education at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. He is principal investigator of a mixed method study of HIV/AIDS risk among young men who have sex with men. He used the internet to meet romantic and sexual partners. Dr. Bauermeister is a co-principal investigator and project director of the Virtual Network Influences on Young Adults, Alcohol, and Drug Use.
Good morning, everybody. Well, good afternoon by now. I am actually presenting today on some interesting data from the Virtual Network study, which was a NIDA-funded study through an RC1 mechanism, looking at how to capture risk, high-risk behaviors through social network data among youth. I have no financial disclosures at this time to disclose, so I've been a good boy. And part of the reason why we wanted to look at this study was that at the beginning of the internet boom and CompuServe and AOL online and all these other systems became available, psychologists were quite interested in understanding why are people using the internet, right, because it was so novel. Why are they creating these communities, these niches? And from that work, there came to be believed there were two competing hypotheses. One hypothesis was the social compensation hypothesis, that people who are introverted, who are socially isolated, who don't seem to cope very well in their day-to-day operations, need to use the internet as a medium of compensating for their social deficits. The internet helps you alleviate some of those social anxieties. Others, that's the risk perspective, the resilience perspective actually said, actually it might be that people are so socially savvy that they're using the internet as an additional bonus, right? It's a way of getting more connections, of expediting the social relationships and the benefits of social interactions that we already have in face-to-face. And so this has been in the literature a very heated debate, and it still happens, right? But then all of a sudden, for the last 5 years, it disappeared. And so one could posit that with the escalation of social networking sites and other ways of thinking about how the internet, now in your pocket or your phone or at a bar or at a restaurant, has changed social interactions in a very different way, right? You don't have to be in front of a computer anymore to have that social interaction. You can be at a bar while you're also, you know, texting somebody, are you coming, are you not, and so on and so forth. So we wanted to see in a sample of young adults ages 18 to 24 whether their use of online technologies would be linked to their mental health. In order to do that, we decided to use an adapted version of respondent-driven sampling, or WebRDS. And respondent-driven sampling is a system by which you recruit initial participants and you incentivize them to go into their own social network and find others to participate in the study. What ends up resulting are these chains of referrals, and you use social network data to create sample weights so that you can actually adjust for who is participating in the study. Now, Wegener and Heckathorn had tried this with young adults at Cornell, where they're both located, and they said, well, if we put it online, how quickly could we get a sample? And it took them a weekend. So they had registrar data for their university. They said, well, let's start on a Thursday. Let's see if we can get a representative sample of young adults who are studying at Cornell in any given time. And 3 days later, they had, I think, 900 and some participants, and comparing it to the registrar data, it was pretty much representative of every college in Cornell and the race and gender distribution. But it had not been tested in a non-college-bound population, and so we decided to give it a shot. So there's information about the virtual network study, and we'll keep adding stuff in there, but it's just a plug, sph.umich.edu/vnet. And as we're writing presentations and stuff, it's going to be in there. So if you're interested, please feel free to visit us. Initially, we wanted to recruit 24 seeds, or initial participants, and we decided to stratify by race and region. So we wanted to make sure that black, Latino, and white youth, who all might have very different social networks and who all use the internet very differently, we know there's digital divides, could have equal probability of accessing. And we also wanted to make sure that it didn't end up being concentrated in only the East Coast, right? That we wanted to get people across the United States and see how those networks would blossom. To get those 24 seats, we recruited through Facebook ads. This is one of our ads right here. And so by using targeting, people would call us, we would screen them over the phone, and if they were eligible, we would then invite them and give them a special coupon that they could have then access to web survey. We actually ended up with 22 seats, 5 black, 8 Latino, and 9 whites, and they're represented by the 4 regions of the census, so 7 in the Northeast, 6 in the South, 4 in the West, and 5 in the Midwest. We ended up with 3,448 cases of real data, although that number has now changed to 3,446, I think, right? We took 2 people who were their outliers, so, and it took us 3 months to get that sample size. When adjusted by the RDS weight, by the sample weight, we end up with an analytic sample of 829 cases from which the analyses for this presentation are included. And just so that you can see, we were able to get at least somebody from each state, with the exception of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska, which is quite interesting. I'm not sure why the Dakotas are missing. I know what Nebraska might be missing. So the age of majority for the state of Nebraska is 21. So if you were trying to participate in our study and you were 8 to 20, you couldn't participate because of age of majority reasons. We had a pretty comparable distribution by sex in our data set, predominantly a white sample. We had underrepresentation of black and Latino youth and an overrepresentation of Asian and Pacific Islanders. And we had a pretty interesting distribution by the regions. So for this talk, I'm using 3 different indicators of psychological well-being, a depression symptom score, an anxiety score, self-esteem score. We're also measuring social support, right? So we know that social support is extremely important in understanding the protective effects on mental health. And so we measured it not only offline, so people in your social network, do they provide you emotional support? But we also wanted to say, well, what happens if you have people who you haven't met face-to-face, but in those interactions online, they actually give you social support? Is there something else added to the model? We also wanted to know why they go online. So we had these 3 scales. Do you use the internet to cope? How often do you do that? Use the internet to cope with anxieties or the stress in your life? An addiction scale that has become quite popular in literature, online addiction. And do you just use it to socialize? And then we adjusted for some covariates, including sex, race, education, and time spent online per week. So we first looked at the correlations for the reasons of using the internet to make sure that there was no multicollinearity, and then examined through multivariate regression the relationship between each of the outcomes of interest, for the psychological well-being scores, with the internet use constructs. Finally, we decided to test for interactions by online social support, and I'll show you why, because it doesn't show up the way that it should, which is quite interesting. So just by looking at the correlation between the internet use scores, you can see that there's some correlation, but not enough that it would make it impossible to include all 3 predictors simultaneously in the model. So for depression, we find that female youth in our sample score higher in symptoms of depression. Those youth who also report having using the internet more often and kind of exhibiting symptoms of addiction were also more likely to have higher depression scores. And those who actually were using the internet to socialize seem to also have be reporting some type of depression symptomatology, a greater incidence. These are standardized beta coefficients, just so you can compare the magnitudes between them. What we also found was that if you use the internet to cope, depression actually seems to be negatively correlated. So the idea of using the internet as a coping strategy seems to have some protective effect. And social support, just as we expect, seems to also protect against depression. We find no differences by race, education, frequency of internet use, or online social support. When we looked at anxiety, we found a very similar pattern to by sex, right? So females also are scoring higher in anxiety. Addiction and socialization are both positively associated with anxiety symptoms. and online support, so using the internet as a way and meeting people who you haven't met face to face, and seeking emotional support from them was also positively related to anxiety. Again, we find no differences by race or education or frequency of internet use or social support, and interestingly, socializing online doesn't seem to be correlated with anxiety. With regard to self-esteem, we find a positive association between education as well as by socialization, so the use of the internet to socialize and social support. And the negative association, if you are female, so females scoring lower in self-esteem, if you report being more addicted to the internet, if you use the internet to cope more often, and if you're also seeking out online social support. We find no differences by race, education, or frequency of internet use. Now, we know that social support is supposed to be protective, right? So why is it that the online social support is acting in the opposite direction? So we decided to stratify our analyses and test for moderation, and we did a median split for online social support, so those scoring less than half of all scores in seeking online social support versus social support higher. And we reran all our models, and I'm just summarizing them here for the purpose of time. So for depression, social support, face-to-face social support, was only protective for those who said they had low online support. There was no association between social support and those in the high online support group with regards to depression. With regards to anxiety, addiction was only associated for those with the high online support group, but yet there was no association between addiction scores and anxiety scores for those in the low online support group. For self-esteem, there was no difference. Okay, so I'll talk about the implications of what we think might be going on, but let me just say the limitations first so that we don't read too much into the data. It's a cross-sectional survey, right? So we might have just gotten kids in a day they were feeling really doom and gloomy. So that's one thing to think about. But it also, because it's cross-sectional, we can make causal assumptions about the relationship between internet use and psychological well-being. We also have a national sample, but it's not a nationally representative sample, right? It doesn't necessarily parallel because of our underrepresentation and an understanding of the entire scope of how these things are operating among youth in the United States. What we can say, however, from a theoretical standpoint, is that we have support both for the rich get richer hypothesis and the social compensation hypothesis. For the rich get richer hypothesis, what we're arguing is that socializing online might be linked to less depression and higher self-esteem scores, right? So there seems to be something there that if I can navigate correctly, I might be better off with regards to mental health. But what we also do find is that kids who are reporting more addiction to the internet or who use the internet to cope might also be reporting more depression and anxiety. So they may be trying to alleviate some of those social anxieties that the literature has pointed to before. They're also more likely to report less self-esteem. So could there be something on self-presentation or not feeling comfortable with who they are and using the internet to recreate a new persona? From a service standpoint, however, it seems to kind of give us a new understanding of what's going on. Can we build web-based mental health programs? Could we create some type of screener that helps us understand why are you using the internet? Are you using it because you need to find online support? In your existing face-to-face social network, you're not getting what you need. And if so, can we create modules to kind of have a mental health toolkit that help you navigate or even kind of be a first aid kit before then moving on to a face-to-face setting like a mental health clinic or a therapist session. So for those seeking out social support online, we may need to do some extra attention. We need to give them some extra attention. That being said, though, I think it's super important to keep talking about the importance of providing social support as a face-to-face strategy in public health, right? So this dichotomy that people keep expressing or assuming that online realities are different from face-to-face realities doesn't seem to mash up anymore, right? We carry the internet with us in our technology, and so in pushing an agenda of online social support therapy or mental health therapy, let's not forget that also face-to-face interactions really matter. And with that, I'll stop for the sake of time, and I just wanted to acknowledge our funders and the Prevention Research Center of Michigan. Thank you.